The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back, June 8th, 2021. In the 1970s and 1980s, when conservatives would sometimes complain about liberals being soft on communism, Jack Kemp would correct them and say they're not just soft on communism, they're soft on democracy. Well, today, when some conservatives here speak of the Biden administration caring more about others and other countries than they do Americans in America, it's not just that they're soft on foreign policy at this administration, they're actually also soft on America. I give you President Joe Biden's first message to Congress, what is otherwise known as the State of the Union. There, President Biden said, quote, "We will get at the root of the problem of why people are fleeing to our southern border from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador. The violence, the corruption, the gangs, the political instability, hunger, hurricane, earthquakes." He said he had, quote, "absolute confidence that Vice President Kamala Harris will get the job done," close quote. As Charles Kessler points out, a thorough moral and political reconstruction of three foreign countries should be a good start. Solving for hurricanes and earthquakes might take a little bit longer, but if we can bend the moral universe to our will, why not the physical one also? We'll come back to that. Let's first, or next, go to Kamala Harris in Guatemala yesterday and today. Yesterday, she told the Guatemalans, quote, "Our message is don't come," close quote. Is that what is considered a grand strategy these days? Telling a contumacious people in another country to not do what you have spent months and years telling them to do and that they plan on doing anyway? The president of Guatemala didn't think so. He said yesterday, quote, "When Biden took office, the U.S. message changed to we're going to reunite families, we're going to reunite children." And the very next day, the coyotes were here organizing groups of children to take them to the United States, close quote. The president concluded by stating that he and Harris are not on the same side of the coin on immigration. Yesterday, Kamala Harris called it a grand gesture, and a false one at that, a grand gesture to visit the American border. But evidently, there's nothing grand or odd or eyebrow-raising or disrupting by traveling or in traveling to Guatemala. It's not as if Guatemala is a country otherwise at the top of our priority list, is it? When's the last time you heard about it or thought about it? After all, it hasn't been visited by a U.S. president in over 20 years, and it's only been visited three times ever by a U.S. president. But with border states struggling, law enforcement suffering, citizens suffering, trafficking taking place, and drugs being smuggled in all to America, Kamala Harris says it would be a grand gesture to care about that, or rather them. You know, the them, Americans. Best to turn our attention elsewhere, perhaps to Guatemala. That's what Kamala Harris said yesterday. Quote, "On the issue of Republicans, political attacks or criticisms or even concerns, the reason I am here in Guatemala as my first trip as Vice President of the United States is because this is one of our highest priorities," close quote. Guatemala, one of our highest priorities. A total of three presidents have ever been there. Not America, by the way. Not Americans, Guatemalans. Which gets us to this morning and the Vice President's interview with Lester Holt on NBC. Do we have that audio, Chris? Here's Kamala Harris and Lester Holt.
Okay. Do you have any plans to visit the border?
We are going to the border. We've been to the border. So this whole thing about the border, we've been to the border. We've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making. I'm not discounting the importance of the border.
Well, I mentioned that because I know Republicans have certainly come at you on this, but Democratic Congressman Cuellar as a border district, has said to you and the president, come.
Listen, I care about what's happening at the border. I'm in Guatemala because my focus is dealing with the root causes of migration. There may be some who think that that is not important, but it is my firm belief that if we care about what's happening at the border, we better care about the root causes and address them. And so that's what I'm doing.
Thank you. Let me reiterate, after the trademark cackle and nervous tell, by the way, which always translates to I don't know and haven't got a good answer. That's what that cackle means. She says, I care about what's happening at the border. I'm in Guatemala because my focus is dealing with the root causes of migration. There may be some who think that that's not important, but it is my firm belief that if we care about what's happening at the border, we better care about the root causes and address them. So that's what I'm doing, she said. Guatemala is the first concern, obviously, here, not the United States. I know, she said it's in order to help the United States down the line. She said the changes will not be immediate and we will be in this for the long haul. And I suspect that's the first truthful thing she said. When you go after root causes, it does take longer. When your house is on fire, it's great that we investigate the cause, but we generally try to put the priority on putting out the fire and saving our human lives first before we tackle faulty wiring issues and construction problems. In other words, as old Screwtape put it, the game is to have them all running around with fire extinguishers whenever there's a flood and all crowding to that side of the boat which has already nearly gone under. Now, what will and should rightly take even longer when those root causes include, as I said, as the president said, violence, corruption, gangs, instability, hunger, hurricanes, and earthquakes. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden may be very powerful, but not so powerful that they can stop Guatemala's violence or corruption, I wouldn't think. Never mind hurricanes and earthquakes. If that's what we're waiting for, we'll never solve the problem. By the way, earthquakes, though they are a terrible thing, I've lived through many, especially in California. I've never heard of anyone being able to talk about how you can actually prevent them or hurricanes. But if Americans were your concern, cackling and begging citizens of another country for help and ignoring your own country's problems would not really be the strategy you'd pick, would it? But helping Americans first would be akin to helping America first. And the transnational woke and progressive ethos of the day, especially in the left and the Democratic Party, is to blame America first, to denigrate America first. It used to be apologize to America. That's what we used to do. Do you recall Barack Obama's apology tour and how disgusted we all were with that? We don't even apologize anymore. That would show a reckoning and all. I guess. We just go straight to criticism, if not damnation, and nothing but. So when the Chinese government or the Russian government blames us for human rights abuses to nullify our concerns about their human rights records, when they blame us for our abuses, they are using nothing less than the speeches and talking points of all that Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and so many other Democrats have been saying about America for at least 3 years. When you declare America systematically racist with a massive shadow of original sin where black Americans have never been treated as fully human, and you say that, and the Chinese government then says all that as well, is it wrong that China said it, or is what China said wrong? You've heard me warn about overuse of words like fascist and fascism and tyrant and tyranny and all other such reductio ad Hitlerums. Of the many problems with engaging this way, one is to detoxify the noxiousness of the original. If, for example, a generation of children are taught that Trump is like Hitler or worse than Hitler, one can only look around the world and America and think Hitler could not have been that bad. If fascism and tyranny are shouted from the streets of America as attributes and descriptors of President Trump and from the base of the U.S. Capitol, fascism and tyranny cannot be that bad. Ironically, of course, the only ones censored are President Trump and his supporters. But in any event, we've so overblamed America that China and Russia and Islamofascists don't have to invent propaganda against us. They can just transcribe into their languages the language of the Democrats from Ilhan Omar to Joe Biden. And guess what? Now, if we are as bad as China or Russia, if America does to its minorities what China does in Xinjiang province or elsewhere, all of which is the intended narrative, what Russia and China do can't be that bad either, right? Oh, there are poor Muslims in America and there are angry Muslims in America. I get it, just like in China. Oh, you say China has slavery. I get it, just like we used to have and still profit from, even as its legacy. But the problem is America just ain't that bad. In fact, if you took a Uyghur Muslim and plopped him in any city in America, he'd literally think he was not in another country and or another hemisphere, but in an entirely different world. But what we have accomplished here is really just a new example of defining deviancy down, detoxifying it, as I say, by putting America on par with all the evil and all the worst evils of the world for political posturing at best and fundamental transformation at worst. But the distinctions in philosophy, as in politics, as in all life, really do matter. And if distinctions between, say, America and Germany in World War II, or America and the USSR were lost on you or others, it makes eminent sense to me that distinctions between America and Russia and America and China today are equally meaningless. It's also more helpful to import and implant socialism here if you can nullify and sanitize current socialist luridities. One way is not to ascribe the luridities, but rather to put our country on par with them. After all, again, if we're like them and things ain't that bad here, indeed to some of us, we think this is a great country, then things can't be so bad over there either, right? And poof, you make the guilty innocent and the innocent guilty, defining deviancy down. That's the phrase from the early 1990s Daniel Patrick Moynihan essay where he wrote, quote, by defining what is deviant, we are enabled to know what is not, and hence to live by shared standards. That is why a political science that dismisses values and distinctions between right and wrong and good and bad, the project of the relativists, that's why we define deviancy down to a more common thing that is accepted rather than a regretful and an anomalous part of social behavior that is discouraged. And as Martin Luther King put it, morality becomes shaded and colors of right and wrong lose their distinctiveness. So do countries. And that is not a good thing to get used to. Being soft on America is the crime here. Caring about her and her citizens and being strong about her and her citizens and prioritizing her and her citizens is never something to apologize for or dismiss as something less than secondary. It leads to chaos, the root of which means empty and void. I can't think of a better definition of relativism, and lack of distinctions than that. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Delight to welcome back Chris Llewellyn as our producer pro tem. If you call, chances are you'll either speak with him or perhaps Rusty, but it would be nice for you to make welcome our vice president of all things important, Mr. Llewellyn. Chris, things going well in your world?
Always, always.
It's good to have you back in the saddle. It's nice that we do these. Going to have a great show for you today. The Hallmans will be in the third hour. Such an interesting person declared his candidacy for the United States Senate from Arizona today. General Mick McGuire is going to be in studio taking your calls and questions as well. And, of course, we're here at 602-508-0960. I've got a lot for you and not a particularly great place to insert it, so I'll just do it here. If it's something you're interested in, I wanted to draw your attention to it. R.R. Reno, Rusty Reno, is the editor-in-chief of First Things. He's been on our show several times. I like him a great deal, and he has a piece in the Wall Street Journal today on, it's titled, Why I Stopped Hiring Ivy League Graduates. And I hope it's too broad, but he makes a point in here that is subtle and not made often enough when it comes to issues having to do with either cancel culture on the campus, censorship on the campus, political, ideological censorship. He writes, and he's writing about his old school, which is Haverford, which is an elite school in Pennsylvania. He writes, Haverford, like Harvard and other top-tier schools, Graduates find young people, no doubt many with well-adjusted personalities and sensible views of the world, but in the past decade, dimitude has become widespread. And he speaks earlier of what dimitude is. It's basically the second-class status of an infidel, right? Anyway, dimitude has become widespread. Normal kids at elite universities keep their heads down. Over the course of 4 years, this can become a subtle but real habit of obeisance, a condition of moral and spiritual surrender. Some resist. They would seem ideal from organizations like his, First Things, which aims to speak for religious and social conservatives. But even this kind of graduate brings liabilities to the workplace. I've met recent Ivy grads, Reno writes, with conservative convictions who manifest a form of post-traumatic stress disorder. Others have developed a habit of aggressive counterpunching that is no more appealing in a young employee than the ruthless accusations of the woke. This is what happens when you give young men PTSD or young women. He writes that in recent years, I've taken stock of my assumptions about who makes for the best entry-level employee. I have no doubt that Ivy League universities attract smart, talented, and ambitious kids. But do these institutions add value? My answer is increasingly negative. Dysfunctional kids are coddled and encouraged to nurture grievances, while normal kids are attacked and educationally abused. Listening to the all-college Zoom meeting I attended also made it clear that today's elite students aren't going to schools led by courageous adults. Deprived of good role models, they're less likely to mature into good leaders. My rule of thumb is to hire from institutions I advise young people to attend. Hillsdale College is atop of that list. He mentions some others. The biggest liability, he writes, he concludes, the biggest liability that comes with hiring graduates from places like Haverford and Harvard is that they have been socialized to panic over pseudo crises. I think that's an important point. Panic over pseudo crises. I spoke about this yesterday in my monologue, didn't I? Pseudo crises or the constant agitation that we live under, the chaos that leads more to emptiness than solution and result to anything. But he writes, talk of systemic racism and fixation on pronouns inculcate in young people an apocalyptic urgency, a mentality that often disrupts the workplace and encourages navel-gazing about diversity, inclusion, and other ill-defined notions that are far removed from the main work of organizations like my own, which reward good writing, good editing, and good arguments. A few years ago, a student in an Ivy League school told me the first things you learn your freshman year is never to say what you're thinking. The institution he attended claims to train the world's future leaders. From what that young man reports, the opposite is true. The school is training future self-censors, which means future followers. It's just an interesting point I'd never considered, the PTSD we inflict or could possibly inflict on 17, 18, and 19-year-olds when they are continually marginalized and told they are not only wrong, but acting in and thinking from behavior that is retrograde, perhaps racist, perhaps unenlightened, perhaps not progressive. What does it do to the mind of a child and the soul and the emotions of a child when they are constantly, for 3 or 4 or 5 years, told this, just as their brain is literally completing its final stages of development? Probably not the best message to put into that fortune cookie when you think about it, is it? I'm Seth Liebson, 602-508-0960. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Delighted to have John Dombrowski with us, as we do every day at this time, 34 past the hour. He brings us our culture and economy moment with our minute with great joy. I was just going to try and get to your website, John, GrandCanyonPlanning.com, as he is the president of Grand Canyon Planning
Associates. How are you today, buddy?
Fantastic. Thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine.
Excellent.
Doing just fine. John, we talked a little yesterday. I was pushing you. You were very good about this, but I was pushing you on this issue of a niche or novel or newsworthy stock.
Right.
And whether it's too late to get in, there's clearly going to be a temptation, particularly if it's a pharmaceutical that looks to solve something like Biogen, right? That's
yes.
what we were talking
yep.
about
yep.
yesterday.
Right.
And it was kind of interesting because it was up hugely yesterday.
Right.
And then it goes down, obviously, a bit today, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think yesterday you were asking me it was up 38% yep. or something. Mm-hmm. You were saying, hey, is it, even though it's up so much, would you recommend the stock? Yep. Is it something? And I had said, well, I wouldn't make a recommendation over the air because everyone's situation is different
sure.
and it wouldn't be prudent of me to do so. However, we talked about the opportunity for people to invest in these types of companies through mutual funds or through ETFs. But I would say this is that oftentimes, when these stocks have these tremendous runs for reasons that we can, explain in this case, I'm not going to go back to these meme stocks that we're seeing that are, going up 80-90% in a day with really no reason other than, speculative reasons.
This is like GameStop and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Right. Whereas this is a company that obviously had something positive, real positive news here with this drug, this treatment for Alzheimer's that was approved by the FDA. So this would give a company a real boost. Now, I did say yesterday, though, oftentimes we see areas of entry points in some types of these stocks if we're in them for the long term that they usually may pull back on, after people digest things and maybe some profits are taking when a stock moves so quickly like this up 38% yesterday. And we did see a pullback in the stock today. Now, does that mean, again, that someone should jump right in and buy the stock? Well, is biotech a good company? Biogen a good company? Yes, they are. They're a great company. They do have some real opportunity for growth here with this particular treatment for Alzheimer's. And it could be a long-term investment for someone out there. If it's something that you're willing to take on this risk, but I would encourage everyone to do your own due diligence if you're your own investor or if you're working with an investment advisor, talk to them about this and see if there's a place for this stock in your portfolio. Today, you can pick it up for substantially less than you could have picking it up, could have purchased it yesterday. Mm-hmm. So if you liked it yesterday, maybe
like $60 or $70 a share or something.
Yeah,
right?
I think yesterday it peaked out at about 451 and
okay.
today it's below 400.
Yeah.
So, if you liked it yesterday at that price, then you should love it today. Right? So again, for a long-term investment, that's the way I look at all of these companies for my clients is we're looking at them based on the company's opportunity for growth and our individual investors, risk tolerance. So overall, I don't want anyone to be emotional about their investing. And oftentimes I think, Seth, people have unrealistic expectations today because we're seeing such erratic movement in very few stocks at this point. But it's creating this frenzy out there, and I don't want people to get caught up in this. I had, I hear people talking in grocery stores about these different things and, standing in line as they're checking out their groceries.
Including coins, on the cryptocurrency.
Yeah, the
side,
Bitcoin, right. Yeah. We're not hearing as much about that right now, and
right.
we've seen these
but
cryptocurrencies.
But you did hear people talk about these great swings, oh, I made,
Yes.
X and overnight. Yeah.
Exactly, and we've seen the cryptocurrencies pull back quite a bit here just recently.
Right.
So maybe people are a little bit, they're not bragging about all the money that they potentially have made.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not making the money right now, right?
Yeah, no.
So I just caution people, be careful, be cautious about this, and do it in a measured way if you're going to invest. Don't invest all of your money in one area of the market or in one stock. Diversify, and that's going to be the key to your success over a long period of time.
Nicely said, John.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
All right, we'll talk tomorrow,
you
Seth. Securities and Advisory Services are to Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, and an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, and Client One Securities LLC, and not affiliated. Check out the website. You can request an appointment right there at GrandCanyonPlanning.com. Happy to meet with you.
Thank you, JD. You're a good man. Anyone who meets with him always agrees with me. 602-508-0960 is our number. We will be right back. That's a good cowbell on that, isn't there? That old Wee Orin Zevon song. covered by Linda Ronstadt there. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show, portions of which are brought to you by my friends at Trades Unlimited. They're for all your roofing needs. That's who I use. In fact, used them this morning. Right now, they want me to tell you about foam roofs and their expertise in those. They help insulate your home, of course, from the extreme Arizona heat, but also from noise and water leaks. Not only do I use Trades Unlimited, as I did today, I have been down to their offices, their warehouse, got to know those folks really well. And there's a reason they have an A-plus rating at the Better Business Bureau. They're just great people with a great work ethic. Quality and service is what you'll come to know with Trades Unlimited. Protect your roof before the foam beneath the coating gets compromised. Now is the perfect time for foam recoats. Don't wait till it's too late. Call my friends over at Trades Unlimited at 480-483-1775. That's 480-483-1775. Or find them online at TradesUnlimited.com. TradesUnlimited.com. You see what Barack Obama said about race relations in this country? Holy smoke. You know, holy smoke. It's the divisiveness in America, he says in an interview with, I guess it was Anderson Cooper over at CNN. The divisiveness in this country over race, he says, is what? You know, you probably know. Right-wing media fear and resentment. Right-wing media fear and resentment. What are we resentful over that has to do with anything regarding race? Let me put it this way. There was more resentment over Joe Biden being elected president in the conservative movement than there was over Barack Obama being elected president from the conservative movement. Far more. Far more. And the notion that we have to keep blaming everything on Whitey is not only becoming tiresome, it's gotten us to this point that everyone in public policy fears, which is if you are attacking the wrong problem or you have the wrong solution to the biggest problem in front of you, you're missing the right solution and you're going to be perpetrating all the things you wish to avoid. Think of crime. Think of violence. Think of our minority communities. Barack Obama says in his interview with Anderson Cooper, I also think there are certain right-wing media venues, for example, that monetize and capitalize on stoking the fear and resentment of a white population that is witnessing a changing America and seeing demographic changes and do everything they can to give people a sense that their way of life is threatened and the people are trying to take advantage of them. Who thinks their way of life is threatened because of issues having to do with race? Outside of violence in the name of race. What resentment of the white population, as Obama says, is witnessing a changing America and seeing a demographic change that threatens their life? Whoever said such foolish nonsense? Who said it when Barack Obama was elected? What happened to the Barack Obama who in 2007 said the Moses generation of civil rights got us 90% of the way there, Moses generation being Martin Luther King, and that the Joshua generation, his generation, will get us the rest of the way? What happened to that Barack Obama? Because as Larry Elder likes to remind us, if Martin Luther King and that generation did 90% of the work and there was only 10% left to do, you'd kind of think being elected president not only once but twice in a majority white country might cut into that 10%, not a little substantially. Wouldn't you think that? Wouldn't you? But what Barack Obama said was there's this fear, white fear. people who are white fearing black people, which explains, he said, why they got so upset for his comment that the Cambridge police were acting stupidly in 2009 when they arrested his professor and friend Henry Louis Gates Jr. That's not why people were upset that he said the police were acting stupidly. They were upset because of the predicate before that sentence. He said in that very moment from the White House lawn, though we don't have the facts, it's pretty clear the Cambridge police acted stupidly. That was the problem. We don't have the facts, but my gut knee-jerk reaction is to blame the police. Do you remember what the story was? It was an odd story. Hard cases perhaps make bad laws, Oliver Wendell Holmes put it, and weird facts make odd moments in politics. But basically, Henry Louis Gates, a black professor at Harvard, had locked his keys in his house and was quote-unquote breaking into his house to get in because he had no other way through the window, and a Cambridge policeman saw him and stopped him. He became belligerent again, resisting arrest problem. Really? No resisting arrest, no problem. The police arrested, tried to question him. He became belligerent, ultimately getting arrested. And the theory was he was arrested for being black in Cambridge, which was foolish when you looked at the record of the policeman, and foolish when you ask yourself how much better you would feel if you were seen breaking into your own house and a policeman, unbeknownst to you, saw you do it and just walked on by. Just walked on by. It was the knee-jerk and gut reaction of the president at that point that upset so many people. The American people thirsted and craved for the Barack Obama who spoke at the Democratic Convention in 2004. They really did. And he was the kind of Democrats Republicans wanted to praise. And there were even Republicans in 2008 who said they voted for Barack Obama just so we could get the race issue behind us. This is a man who won states that had gone for Republicans and states that were 99% white. Some man who beat the two most famous white men in American, if not world, politics. There was no resentment over the race of Barack Obama. There's no resentment about race against blacks. There was resentment against whites and other institutions being told they were racist without evidence, because that became the best tool in the Democratic Party's toolbox. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am thinking Kamala Harris is coming back a little tainted and a little singed from her experience in Guatemala. She didn't want to do grand gestures to her visiting Arizona, New Mexico, or Texas. Is a grand gesture, not so much traveling all the way to Guatemala to lecture the people, not to travel and to be lectured by the president of Guatemala to quit inviting them if you don't want this problem. You think she's been on this job, as I pointed out in my monologue, a little over 3 months, so you know they've been hard at work developing a strategy. You know that, right? They've been at this for 3 months. She was designated to lead the task force on solving the border, not the crisis, but the concern. Isn't that what they called it? The border concern. We'll talk to someone who knows a lot about the border in a few minutes, General Michael McGuire, who's announced his candidacy for the Senate here in Arizona. U.S. Senate from Arizona will be in with us. He knows a lot about the border, former adjutant general of the National Guard. But she not only comes back with that tail between her legs, she capstoned it with a massively unfortunate interview with Lester Holt of NBC, whom I'm guessing she expected would give her an easy interview. When Kamala Harris kept saying, "We've been to the border," and she said it three or four times, he finally called her on it. She was flat-footed. Chris, do you have that audio again? If you don't mind, just follow my cue on ending it. Sorry about that. Should have warned you. Lester Holt and Kamala Harris this morning on NBC. We used it in the monologue if we have it. There we go. Almost. No. Yes. In any event, she said, we'll get the audio later, but she said four or five times we've been to the border collectively. Yeah, there it is. Go ahead. Take it from the top.
We are going to the border. We've been to the border. So this whole thing about the border, we've been to the border. We've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
Four times she says it. And then he says, you've been to the border. Oh, I haven't, but I haven't been to Europe.
I understand the point that you're making.
I've been to Europe. I haven't been to Europe. It's just not funny, but it does lead to the cackle. What is that cackle? Smart listener here, Curtis, writes, the Kamala cackle defined as a somewhat nervous, somewhat haughty laugh used to diminish a question and its asker when you don't like the question and don't have an answer. Why would she say we've been to the border, we've been to the border? Why would she say that? Why would she say it four times? Because she thinks it's the right answer? If she thinks it's the right answer, then we caught her in another tell. If she thinks the right answer is that I have been to the border by saying we've been to the border four times, then she should, for goodness sake, stop making excuses for not going to the border and just do it and show that you care about Texans and New Mexicans and Arizonans, known also as Americans.